What's up, Atlanta sports fans? I'm Graham Waldrop, and alongside me, as always, is Adam. We're going streaking Kalal, and we are Atlanta Zone. Two Atlanta natives recapping the week that was in Atlanta professional sports with wacky ass hijinks and analysis presented by ourselves. Adam, how's it going, sir?
Was that a almost slip up there, just based off habit?
I was trying to think of something to substitute, and nothing came out. I was like, ourselves. That's inoffensive.
That's pretty good. Yeah. We used to do our fake ads back in the day. But that's when, you know, we tried more back then.
Yeah.
Let's start this episode over.
That's a great start.
Let's start
over.
I think
we still try. Remember, you got to a point where you're like, I can't do it. I can't come up with a fake ad every week. Well, it's too much.
Well, there's too much content to talk about nowadays, Graham. That might have been 2020, now that I think about it.
Yeah, with our 30-minute episodes we do now when it's just baseball season.
so much
to talk about.
It's the dog days of summer now.
We're not the dog. I think July is when you... And August are the real dog days. Summer's just started.
I mean, this pretty much three quarters of the year is just looking forward to September when you have football and baseball.
Mm-hmm.
September, October overlapping.
Yeah.
Basketball cranking up.
Yeah, classic time.
Yeah. But hey, strictly Braves, let's get into it, Graham.
Let's do it.
It's been a productive couple series for the Braves so far.
Yeah, Braves are have won four in a row and have won four of their last five. It's really interesting how last year, around this time, we go to Arizona when the Braves were underperforming. Snicker calls a closed-door meeting, team meeting. As we know, the Braves went apeshit the rest of the year, won like 70 of their last 100 games or something like that, won the division. This year, you know, Braves definitely got off to a hotter start, but had a very sluggish May, very mediocre May, lost a series to Oakland, the worst team in baseball, and then they... lose the first game in Arizona. Snicker again calls a closed door meeting, and the Braves proceed to win that series, and they haven't lost since that meeting. So it's history repeating. It's kind of like go to Arizona, get yourself right.
Also, June. We love June.
We love June. That's when it happened last year. It was like right around the same time. And they were inspiring victories. You know, the first Diamondbacks win was great, and then the last one, back and forth affair. Soroka didn't have his best stuff. Eddie Rosario hits the walk-off grand slam. Eddie Rosario's hot again, which is great. We'll see how long that lasts. And then comeback victories against the Mets as well. So three comeback victories in a row where the offense has really had to carry the load because the pitching staff has given up 14 runs in the last three games. But the Braves have scored 21 runs in the last three games. So averaging seven runs in the last three games. So the offense is definitely... carrying this team right now.
Well, it's also we're just back to, you know, all year we've kind of complained about how this offense is so reliant on homers, but we're seeing a little more of that two out thunder, a little more ABC baseball, stealing bases, and the bottom of the order feeding the top. That's what was so great for us the last couple of years. And you know, we're seeing, like you mentioned, Rosario, he's kind of been hitting in the middle, but I think he's got like three homers since you talked shit about him last week.
He kept texting me. It's like, your boy Rosario says, fuck you, Graham, over and over again. Well, you spoiled the grand slam for me. I was a watch it later person.
Well,
I was like, oh, Rosario must have done something. I didn't conceive
did
that was
going to
be a grand slam.
Yeah, did he ever? With two outs in the ninth.
Yeah.
So you love to see it. But then, I mean, you also, Michael Harris, he was starting to show a little bit of life, just hitting the ball hard at least. And then last night against the Mets, he just goes off 3-for-4. Started it with a bunt, Graham. You know, he called, that wasn't called for him. He just got himself a nice little bunt base hit, ended up on second base, and then next thing you know, he's 3-for-4, hits just a massive two-run bomb to straightaway center field in the eighth to win the ball game for us. And I don't know if you saw this, but it was very surprising, kind of refreshing to me. It's like talking about Marcelo Zuna and what the fans think about him versus what the clubhouse does. Michael Harris was saying Ozuna pulled him aside in the dugout like prior to the game and like gave him a little pep talk. It's kind of just like, hey, be loose. Stop worrying about mechanics. Yeah. Like, you're the best center fielder in the league. Just be you, and it's going to happen. So it's kind of cool to hear, like, you know, some positive stories out of Ozuna.
Yeah. Acuna also was saying Ozuna has always been a consummate teammate.
Yeah.
So it seems like his off-the-field issues do not interfere with the clubhouse and that he's actually an asset. You know, as a clubhouse leader, which is not what you'd expect, just because I think we do look at everything, right? And we get so distracted by the off-field stuff and the poor performance that was before the last month or so. And we're just like, this guy's worthless in all respects. And then you don't hear about the good stuff. You don't hear about him as much grind. I mean, you start to hear about how hard he worked when he started to do well. And then this is a really good story of Mike Harris too. But it's interesting now that Ozuna is kind of the belle of the ball. You know, he started to be productive, and he's also providing good leadership in the locker room. And it seems like he's always done that. And now we're hearing about it. So now I think people are starting to reevaluate Ozuna a little bit more as time has gone on. And him playing better obviously has a lot to do with that. But it is interesting how the perception of Ozuna has done a complete 180 since, you know, the end of April.
Yeah, it's good to hear stories like that. He did have the moment in Arizona where he hit a like 430-foot single.
In fairness, that looked gone. Like he hit the shit out of that ball. Arizona is such a weird field. It's got that huge, you know, it's got deep center field. You know, it's beyond 400 feet, like you mentioned, 415 feet. And it's got this weird overhang in center field if you're not familiar with it. And you have to hit it, and it's up. Like, it's big. Like, you have to, like, hit the ball, like, 40 feet above where you normally hit it for it to be a home run. It'd be gone in 23 out of the 32 parks in baseball. But, yes, it hit the right under the yellow line, and Snicker pulled Ozuna.
There's no quicker way to get benched by a Brian Snicker or Bobby Cox run team than not hustling out what should be a double.
Yeah, and we've seen Snicker do that. We saw him do that with Ender, and I think in like 2017 or 2018 as well. Something like that happened
to Acuna.
Yeah, and I think too, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, I've never been a fan of pimping home runs just because shit like that can happen. But I've also kind of come to accept it's just part of today's game. But that's when it can bite you in the ass when you least expect it. And I think, but I also like too, you know, Snicker was like, you know, in the post game was just saying, hey, you know, we can't do that. No one feels, you know, he feels a hell of a lot worse than I feel having to bench him. Yeah. And so, like, you know, there's a lot of contrition there. And, you know, Ozuna knows he messed up. And, you know, that's the thing I like about the Braves clubhouse and Snicker in general. It's like, you know, you gotta, when something like that happens, you got to hold people accountable regardless of how well they're doing or how poorly they're doing. Treat everybody the same. You know, I would expect, you know, even if Freddie Freeman was here and he did that, same thing would happen. You know,
it's like, for sure,
no one gets preferential treatment. And, you know, it's just, I appreciated how that was handled. Now it's swept under the rug. Everybody's cool. And now we're back to baseball.
Yeah, they've just got such a nice mixture of veterans to go along with these young guys to, like, not even like a matter of like, I feel like with Freddie, he was more like, I'm going to put you in line. Whereas like, it's kind of just a little more wisdom coming from these guys. Like you look at Jesse Chavez and like, he's been huge for AJ Minter this year,
right?
Where Minter was sitting on like an 8.5 ERA in like middle of May. And now he's come back and gone like, what, I think 7 or 8 straight scoreless innings, including closing out the game against the Mets last night.
Yeah. He's gotten his shit together. That's for sure.
And he was crediting Chavez for kind of just like talking him through some stuff. And he was also just saying he looks up to Jesse in terms of the fact that he's 40 years old and still pitching. And like Chavez back in his day had stuff similar to AJ. So AJ's like seeing, you know, how long this guy's been in the league and how you got to learn to pitch. And like, sometimes the stuff's not going to be as good as it was. So you have to learn how to like just hit the corners a lot more. So yeah. I think, you know, guys like that, guys like Morton, and what he's meant for like Bryce Elder and Spencer Strider. You know, these guys aren't necessarily like the stars on the team or like the superstars or anything like that, but you just got to have these veterans in place to just teach.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, that's another thing about Freddie. Freddie was kind of like, he was more of a silent leader too. You never really saw him vocalize, but he sort of led by example. And I think that has, even though, yeah, I agree, he was kind of like the sheriff and everything, but I also think that that's rubbed off a little bit on guys like Ozzy. Guys like, I was about to say Dansby, but Dansby's not here anymore. But even with Dansby last year, you know, it was kind of like this not as super vocal leadership, but just like a way of going about things. And I think the Braves all have a collective buy-in on how to do stuff. And, you know, you hear when people come in who are new, Olsen and Murphy in particular stand out in my mind about just the clubhouse culture is so great and that everybody's welcoming, everybody works together. It's not like everybody's got to be best friends, but everybody knows what they need to do and they get along and they mostly have fun while they're doing it. And it goes a long way to performance. I mean, like, you know, we've heard horror stories, you know, about, like, you know, the Mets before Buck Showalter showed up. And I know they're having a bad year this year, but just, like, look at how much better their clubhouse was with a different culture. Like, culture is so important to the success on the field. You got to have great talent, but if everybody's miserable, it's not going to translate.
This damn Mets, Graham. I want to talk about these Mets.
I know. It's like your most hated team. Not just because they're NL East rivals, but because you've said last year on this air that you think they're the most overrated 100-win team in the history of professional baseball.
Yeah, and like everyone's like raving about Buck Showalter. He's never won shit.
He's won a lot of games, but he has never won the World Series.
Exactly.
And I don't think he's ever... I don't even know if he's been to a World Series.
Not with the Yankees, they never did?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
It was funny. It was like the year... It was funny with I don't know why I know this, but the year he was... So he was fired from the Yankees in 95. That's when Joe Torre came in. Yankees won the World Series. He was fired from the Diamondbacks after the 2000 season. They won the World Series. So that's... I don't know. That's a really funny coincidence to me. Unfortunately, it didn't happen with the Orioles after he left. They went on like a five-year, 100-game losing streak. But... or 100 games per year losing streak. So... I think Buck is a really good. He does a great job instilling clubhouse culture. Being like a Orioles are my second team, he did wonders with that roster and that clubhouse. And they won a lot of games, won playoff series. But yeah, he's never been able to. I don't think he's ever been able to get to the World Series. But there is something to be said about the culture he instills in a locker room. I think, even though I feel like the Mets are unraveling a little bit this year.
Well, I mean, just look at this lineup, Graham. So we got...
But do you blame him for the lineup?
You know, I'm not as in tune with the Mets and some of the decisions. All I know is Frank the Tank hates Buck Showalter right now.
Well, he hates everybody.
But he really hates Showalter.
Showalter does make, like a lot of managers, make some questionable decisions. But I think as, like, a general, as a guy who leads men, I think he does a good job with that.
So he was complaining about, like, the decision last night. They bring in Ottavino, who apparently is incapable of holding a runner on base. And
when Acuna was on
base. And Acuna, yeah, like, easily steals second and third.
Right.
And then Harris, well, not Harris hits the homer, but how did we score after that? Maybe that was a different inning. But anywho, like, it was just like, you know.
Yeah, it's also, he left Scherzer in way too long last night.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, he's bad with that stuff, for sure. And that is a problem. That can cost you games. But I think, like, by and large of it, you know, the guys won a lot of games for a reason.
I mean, it's probably... I mean, I think their problem's this lineup. You got Brandon Nimmo. He's fine.
Yeah.
Jeff McNeil. Fine. They're super... One of their superstars, Lindor. He's hitting .216.
That was one...
OBP of .290.
That's horrible. Yeah.
Alonso, their superstar, hitting .231.
But he has had
OBP .326. Brett Beatty.
Don't even know who that is.
Starling Marte, hitting .245.
Yeah.
As Frank the Tank calls him, Daniel Vogelfat.
That's something coming from Frank the Tank.
He's hitting .203. That's the one they're like, why the hell do they keep hitting Vogelfat? Like, he's awful. Like,
yeah,
he just doesn't swing.
Remember how Bobby Cox used to run out Corky Miller all the time because he loved him so much? It was like the few years we went where we didn't go to the playoffs, like 2006 and 7 and stuff. Yeah. It was the same kind of thing. It was like, Corky Miller's coming in as a pinch hitter, or he's like starting, you know, three games a week. It's like, why is Corky
Vogelbach is like every damn
but he's
day?
Every day. Yeah, it's bad. And like, but you know, Buck is like loyal to a fault. I mean, Chris Davis, remember Chris Davis in the Orioles, who had that a couple years where he was hitting like 50 home runs and they signed him this mega deal and then he hits like 180 the rest of his career. Buck kept throwing him in the lineup. One, because he loved him, too. I'm sure the contract had a lot to do with that, but he is loyal to a fault with lineups, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, like, not a very intimidating line. Like, they don't have injuries to their, like, starters.
Yeah, but you would think if Marte, Lindor, and Alonso were... Alonso's still having a good, productive year power-wise. But if Lindor, Marte, and Alonso had better overall numbers, that lineup's better, for sure. But I would agree that in terms of, like, if you look at our lineup versus their lineup, there's no comparison. They cannot match, you know, Acuna or Albies or Sean Murphy, you know, or Olson, you know, I feel like, in terms of just overall production, they can't match that with their entire lineup, those four players, I don't think.
I mean, at this point, we got to start talking about the Marlins, Graham.
The Marlins, you know, I keep saying the run differential and shit. and you know how they have a negative run differential. I said every week it's like minus 50, it's minus 40. Well, you know what? Now it's minus 32. They're starting to score more runs than they're giving up, and they're on like a 5-6 game winning streak.
Yeah,
and it's so weird too because Sandy Alcantara is having a horrible season. The last year, you know, the reigning Cy Young champ is having an awful season pitching. He's only had like 4 good starts all year. I know this because he's on my fantasy team, and yet they're still doing fantastic overall. They are surpassing all expectations.
Well, they got freaking Luis Reyes. Their starting second baseman this year came over from the Twins.
Yeah, that was a good...
He's hitting .403 still. Yeah. It's June,
he'll probably win the damn batting title. Like, he had 4 RBIs the other night, and you know what? They are also taking advantage of a really favorable schedule. If you look at their last four opponents, Angels, sweep, Padres, they lost that series, but they swept the Athletics and they swept the Royals. So I mean, they are winning. You know, they've swept 3 of their last 4 series. They are on a roll.
They're taking care of business.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think they're what, 3 games back of us right now.
3 games back, currently on a 6 game winning streak.
So to me, they're a bigger threat than the Mets.
The Mets, I'm not going to count them out because I feel like that team can still do something. They're definitely in a funk, but we were in a funk last year too. And I'm not saying, you know, they are us or anything, but that they can still do things. Even with that, you know, quote unquote shitty lineup that they're shitting on, that shitty lineup won 100 games last year. And they did that a lot without DeGrom. So it's like, they're still hanging around. They're 7.5 games back right now. We could sweep them tonight and really, you know, bury them further. But I would say, yes, as of right now, the Marlins are definitely more of a threat than New York.
Yeah, no, it's early, but it's just like Alonso talking shit on Monday.
Oh, yeah, what a loser. So he's like, throw it again after he hit that home run off Elder.
To Bryce Elder, of all people, who, Bryce Elder's only given up like 3 homers all year, and B, he's never pitched against the Mets, so like, why are you talking shit to Bryce Elder?
Yeah. And you know,
C, he's the most quiet guy on the team.
Yeah. And you know what's funny, too? Like, the Mets have no reason to talk shit. They blew the division last year. We've beaten them 10 out of 12 times. The only championship Pete Alonso has won is the Home Run Derby. I'm sorry. Have you even won a division? I don't think so.
No.
Like, fuck you.
Yeah. No. And like, you just got to know, as being a New York Met, you can't do that right now. Like, you have to quietly beat us.
Yeah.
That's just fuel.
Yeah.
You got Matzik in the dugout. Screaming.
I love that Matzik was there.
Yeah. Screaming, throw it again after the Braves like take the lead like 2 innings later. Mm-hmm. It's all over social media. It's like the new mantra of the year. Like, we had the Tiger Woods thing a few years ago.
Yeah.
Now we got this.
And we also last year had the NL East is over.
Yes.
Thanks. LeCantra looked
Sal
at whatever
Okada.
Okada.
Yeah. Braves never lose thanks to Frank the Tank.
I remember that Frank. That's my favorite Frank the Tank. He's just like, the Braves never lose. They are God's team.
He hates us this year. He's like,
he hates us so much.
The whole fan base is applauding when Alonso gets hit. This is a classless organization.
Were people applauding for that?
Well, I think they were not realizing how hurt he was. I think they thought it was
that's
throwing at him for revenge.
We usually don't do stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean,
that's like something that the New York Mets fans would do, or Philly fans or something.
I mean, the crowd was just like dialed into Alonso, like they were booing him when he was announced and all that.
Well, I think it also comes back to
that's exactly why.
Right.
Good to win the series, no matter what happens with Strider pitching tonight.
We win the series. Let's talk a little bit about Michael Soroka. Adam had a sort of rough time in his return to the majors. Anthopoulos went on record saying that, you know, we're not going to bring him up until, you know, he's ready, and then he's not going to go down once he comes up. Pretty much, I'm paraphrasing, but he did say that. It's 2 starts. Neither start went well, particularly against Arizona. He just had to kind of like 1 bad inning against the A's. But the Arizona start, his balls just aren't sinking, man. Like, the sinker that he is so reliant on for inducing weak contact is just flat. The slider's flat. Anyway, it didn't go well. And they sent him down after 2 starts. And I'm kind of surprised that they sent him down after Anthopoulos was like, once he's up, he's staying up kind of thing. But I'm interested in your thoughts on it. Do you think it was the right move to send him down?
Yeah, I mean, he just wasn't able to put guys away. And I think you give him a couple more starts if it weren't for the young gun, Smith Shawver, coming up and looking so good in that same game.
He did. He came in and just did yeoman's work.
And he looked like a starter, too, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he was throwing 96-97, but, like, he could gotten it up to 100 if he needed to, but like he was just pitching like a starter still.
Yeah.
And like this team is not scared to go with the best available option. And like, there's no doubt Smith-Shawver looks better than Soroka. Yeah, so
I agree. But not, you think Anthopoulos would be more careful with his words? You think that even matters?
It doesn't matter.
I don't think it matters. Yeah. I think, you know, he was bullish on that. And then, you know, it's okay to walk something back. Like, it's not the end of the world. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, I think at the end of the day, the only person it matters to is Soroka, but I'm sure that they had a lot of words in private about it. And, you know, maybe I think they went to Soroka quicker than they wanted to, just because they kind of had to.
Yeah.
With the state of the rotation. So
yeah.
Excited to see Smith-Shawver pitch either Friday or Saturday against the Nationals. And yeah, maybe he's another little weapon, just like Strider last year, Elder this year.
Yeah.
It's nice that we're like kind of just plugging and making it work with these guys until.
It's crazy that that keeps working.
Yeah.
We'll see how it works with Smith-Shawver.
Developing talent, Graham. It's a thing.
It is a thing. It's what we have to do because we don't spend a lot of money. So it's something we have to do.
I mean, we only have like the top five payroll in the team, but league, but you know, not a lot of money.
Well, I'm just saying compared, like we could spend more money.
You'd rather be the Mets just throwing money at anything. And
because I think
the
Mets are not serious people to me. They're not serious people because they have a lot of money. They're like Nepo babies. They're like the kids on Succession. They have a lot of money. They'll throw it at things like, you know, shiny things like a Verlander and a Scherzer, but they don't think about the optics, Adam. They don't think about the optics of the situation, and they expect everything to just work by giving $50 million to two guys who combined to be 85 years old, who are great pitchers, but are definitely at the tail end of their careers, and they've had health problems, and they build their team around that, and it doesn't work. It's just poor strategy. I would love to have that much money to throw at people, for sure, but I think the way they've spent their money is so dumb. They are not a serious franchise at all.
So you're saying the Mets are... They're seeing that shiny Porsche on like Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah.
And they're just buying it without looking under the hood.
Right. Yeah.
They're not taking it to their mechanic.
No.
They're not getting it checked out.
No. They're like, that looks good. I'm going to be Kendall Roy. That looks good, Dad. I think I'm going to buy that Porsche. I'm going to buy that Justin Verlander Porsche. And it's going to make a big noise like that motorcycle that just went by, Dad.
I mean, they win all the trophies in like December.
They do.
In the offseason.
Remember, they also did the fake, I love talking shit about the Mets. They did that a few years ago. They did a, let's imagine we won the World Series in spring training. You remember that shit?
No.
So, spring training is before Showalter came in. They imagined that they would win the World, like, how's a team react when they win the World Series? So they had, like, a guy fly out to the right fielder, guy caught it. And they all celebrate in front of no one.
Oh,
like
man.
They've won the World Series. Like, guys, just imagine you're winning the World Series right now. It was like a theater production in middle school or something. It was ridiculous. There's video of it online.
It's really
hilarious. Just go on Twitter and say, Mets win World Series. And you know, the only thing that will come up is that shit. It's their fake World Series.
That's crazy.
It's like put them in a positive mindset or something. But it's just so dumb. I think that's just so dumb to do.
I mean, if you do it, you don't want that to get on camera.
That's the thing. Everybody recorded it, and now it's out there. And
just a loser organization.
They really are. And the thing that's crazy is that, you know, they really showed that, you know, last year that they could rise above adversity. They changed the clubhouse culture. They won 100 games. They got back to the postseason. And now they're just taking a big old shit on that progress with poor offseason decisions. And a team that just seems like they almost like ran it back, if you think about it. They pretty
They're
much
like
just,
the Hawks a couple years ago.
Yeah, they subbed who was it? They subbed Verlander for DeGrom. Right? Because they had Scherzer last year, right?
Right.
Yeah. So that's pretty much what they did. They didn't really make any moves on offense. They pretty much just ran it back, and they invested so much money in Francisco Lindor. And to their credit, I thought that was a brilliant move to bring in Francisco Lindor. I mean, he had been the class of the shortstop position for years. Excellent player, excellent all around, you know, defender, you know, offensive player. Always was a high on base percentage guy with power. He could do it all. Now he's just regressed into nothing, and they gave him like a 13-year extension worth like, I don't know, $240 million, something insane like
that. Oh, a lot more than that, probably.
Or maybe like, yeah. So it's just like, I, you know, that's just a catastrophic move. And it's also a guy who's in the prime of his career. So like that blew up, and that, you know, I don't think that was like the worst move in the world, but basing your rotation on two, you know, on Verlander and Scherzer at this stage in their career is just a bad move. You didn't upgrade offensively at all, really, and you just expected to run it back and do it again pretty much. So yeah, it's really not forward thinking.
You know, as much as I love talking shit about these teams, and I just want to throw, you know, the Phillies under the bus real quick as well.
They won four in a row.
Well, they're still 29-32. Some of these big names are not doing what they thought they would.
You're really upset.
Trey Turner's hitting like 240.
That was such a big name.
Schwarber's hitting 179.
I know you're really upset about that for your fantasy.
Although apparently Schwarber goes off in June, so we shall see.
But
it is still early in the season, Graham. You are right. Let's not sleep on any of these teams. Good on Washington for being respectable this year. 25-36.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're only, what, one game behind?
Look out for them in a couple of years.
Yeah, they're a half game behind the Cardinals. You know, it's not like they're Oakland or Kansas City or anything like that. So,
point is, I'm happy with where we are.
I am, too, and I'm really happy to see Austin Riley do well. Austin Riley has
cranked it up big time. He's seen the ball.
Big. He has figured something out. And I know we talked about last week, but like, it's consistent.
He's all over the place.
It's consistent. He's hitting the ball to all fields, hitting for power, having better at bats. You know, Ozuna continues to contribute as well. He went through that little stretch, you know, that's like 1-for-19 kind of slump, and now
he's been good again.
He's coming back.
Clutch hits, two out hits.
And it's so big to have, you know, Travis d'Arnaud on your bench. You need Travis d'Arnaud, you can plug him in. And I like, you know, Sean Murphy has, you know, he is the guy at catcher, and that's okay. And I think, you know, and that spoke, and it speaks to the move the Braves made when they brought him in. They gave him that huge extension, and that said that he's the catcher of the future, and he has lived up to that billing. He is the best, he might be the best catcher the Braves have ever had in our lifetime. All around. Can you think of a better, like, Javi Lopez can't touch this guy's jockstrap. I love Javi.
I'm glad you see the light now, Graham.
Well, you know, it's forward thinking stuff. You have the opportunity to go get a great player regardless of position. They got him. And they probably
This is a 180, Graham.
This is a 180 for me because I was.
You thought it was the dumbest move in America.
I think it was the dumbest move, but I was like, you know, you have these holes in left field, and I still think that's stupid. But I can't deny how good Sean Murphy is and how he has flourished here and become an even better offensive player. We knew the defense was going to be good, and it has been excellent. But the offense has also been excellent. He is so valuable to this team such a fantastic player.
It's crazy getting out of Oakland. Like, his career high in homers is 18, and he's already up to 12.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to fly by that before the All-Star break.
He'll hit 30 home runs if he stays healthy.
Yeah. No, he's been just extremely consistent and a tough out, and I think great for the pitching staff. Great. I mean, unbelievable defensively. So
we have never had a catcher as good defensively as him.
You think he's better than like Eddie Perez defensively?
Yeah,
surely Eddie was pretty good.
Eddie was good defensively, but Eddie could not throw guys out the way that Sean Murphy throws guys out. The accuracy is like every time someone tries to steal on him, it seems like he guns them.
She's right there.
He beats them by at least a step.
Yeah,
I mean it's incredible, and it's like they talked about it in, you know, preseason spring training, how it's like every throw is like a line drive, and the pitcher's got to, like, move out of the way. He can't just duck. He's got to, like, do a barrel roll to the right to make sure that he's not going to get hit by this laser coming to second base. And he's lived up to the billing and more, man. I am blown away by how good he is. And left field be damned. If you can get a player of that caliber and your left field is kind of like, eh, then so be it. Because he's a literal game changer. If you had a good left, you know, a better left fielder, and then you had the Contreras d'Arnaud catching battery, it's, you know, I'd say we'd still be probably in a relatively similar position. But I think in terms of, like, when it comes down to the postseason, right? And I'm already looking ahead to that, and that's probably a dangerous thing. But when it comes to the postseason, and you got a guy who can be that good offensively and that good defensively at a premium position where catcher can literally change the game with how they call games, throwing guys out on steal attempts, especially with the new rule changes, Sean Murphy is the way.
It's pretty sweet to, I can confidently say, right now we have the best catcher in the NL East.
Yeah, Real Muto can't touch this guy. If Real Muto, if it was 7 years ago, whatever. But Real, you know, yeah, we definitely have.
And
the
he's
best
still
catcher
young. He's still young.
We have the best catcher.
He could get better.
We have the best catcher in baseball.
Yeah.
And it's really going to come down to for these Braves to me. Watch out for the Marlins. They're pesky little bastards. And then you gotta bolster, like I've been saying, bullpen rotation. Let's go get some people. You mentioned last night off air that the Royals are making Scott Barlow and Aroldis Chapman available. Definitely think that's something we should look into.
Yeah, they said they'd package them both in one trade. Like, you can instantly change your bullpen with that. One thing we're kind of forgetting about our bullpen, who's like still statistically been pretty damn good, Dylan Lee is out. And he was just such a huge, quiet piece. He's like just so underappreciated for how damn good he was. Mm-hmm. And like, you kind of forget with like these guys that come in and just get three outs in the sixth or seventh, just like how that sets up the rest of the game or like keeps you in a game. Mm-hmm. So if you're down two and Dylan Lee comes in and shuts him out, then like with our offense, you can score three or four late. But if you've got some of these other guys down there coming in and blowing these games, then you're out of it. So like, I think getting Dylan Lee back, which I think like he shouldn't be out that much longer, that's going to be huge for the bullpen.
That's going to be huge. But I'm also, I wonder about, you know, it's another thing. I hate to keep going back to it, but the question marks, right? Can he hold up down the stretch? He's already been overworked to start the season and now he's been out, you know, it's like when he comes back, can he hold up? I would still want insurance. Like, it's great if he comes back and can do his thing, but get the bullpen better. The bullpen has got to be more consistent than what it's been. And it's great that Mentor has locked it down. Iglesias has looked great recently.
Chavez has been unbelievable.
Chavez is defying everything right now. But I want, like, at least one more guy I can depend on, because you need four great bullpen pieces.
Nick Anderson's been really damn dependable.
He's been really good, but again, that's a guy that doesn't have a lot of experience. I would love some people with more experience.
Sir? Nick Anderson? Yeah. He of pitching for the Rays in the like playoffs and World Series, Nick Anderson?
Yeah,
he doesn't have experience?
I need more, Adam.
You could say you need more, but don't just like make up experience as just something to say. Nick Anderson has plenty of experience.
He's only been around since 2019.
He's 32 years old, bro.
He's only been around since 2019.
That's 5 years.
That's not a lot of experience. I need guys who have been, who've seen the shit, all right? He only played 6 games in 2021. 23 in 2019. He's only thrown 112 innings in his career. That's not a lot of experience. I don't care how old you are. I'm talking about what is on the back of your baseball card. Yes, he's pitched in big games for Tampa Bay. And yes, he did really well, especially in the 2019 ALDS. But I need more than what we have right now, experience-wise. Iglesias and Mentor, I'm not worried about. And Chavez, I'm not worried about either. Even though it's still kind of scary with him with the lack of velocity. But he's fantastic. I need like a couple more pieces I can be like, I know what I'm going to get from these guys. Because Jimenez ain't the guy. Nick Anderson could be the guy. But you just don't know.
Yeah, still got some good arms out there. McHugh.
I do like McHugh a lot.
Is that enough experience for you?
That's enough experience for me. Okay. I'm just saying, when a guy's only been around for 4 years, that's not a lot of experience.
But it's like saying like you've got a stud, like second-year player. You don't want him because he doesn't have experience.
Would you classify Nick Anderson as a quote-unquote stud?
He's been a top-tier reliever.
He's been good. He's been very good. But
I'm saying experience doesn't mean good or bad.
No, it doesn't. But I'm just saying, when like you could also look to someone like Chris Young, who's no longer, I don't know if he's still playing or not, but you know, he was like 45 years old, still pitching. He had a lot of experience, but would you want him at this stage in his career? No. Okay. I'm just saying, I would like a guy who has more than 4 years of experience.
Once again, Graham, you just want us to go out and get a good ball player.
I want a good ball player who has been through the wars.
Okay.
Jesse Chavez has pain and experience. That's one reason why he's so fucking good and pitching at this well at age 40.
I want more Jesse Chavez's.
Yeah. You mean more Jesse Chavez's. What do you think? How do you feel about rotation-wise, Max Fried officially placed on the 60-day injured list earlier this week? I'm not too concerned about that. I don't know if that really affects his return that much, because I think that's backdated to when he was out.
Yeah, for sure.
My mom sent me this text. It's like, I just heard about Max, and I was like, holy shit, what is it? And I was like, oh, this is just like paperwork
kind of thing. Yeah, it was in order to bring up this Munoz kid for like 2 days, and then he got sent back down for, I can't remember that kid's name. The guy who, Wright? What's his name? Mike Tonkin. Michael Tonkin.
Tonkin.
Yeah, who got called back up today. So
I do like Tonkin. And Heroes Emerge, too. You know, like, you know.
Like Matzik. Matzik didn't have experience.
He didn't have a ton of experience. But he showed up when he needed to. But yeah, it's one of
those.
You
want Will Smith back is what you want. He's got experience.
He does have experience. I don't think the Rangers are going to give him up, though, with how well they're playing.
That would be funny. I could see us traded back for him. Although, yeah, you're right, though. They are a first-place team,
yeah,
right?
They're doing too well.
That's weird.
Bruce Bochy, man. Talk about another guy who'd like...
Now, that's a good coach.
That guy has won three championships.
See, that guy knows how to win championships.
He knows how to win. Like, he's also, he's a good coach, but he also knows how to win.
Yeah.
Like, when you absolutely have to win, which Buck has never quite figured out.
Showalter is...
story career.
Half of Bochy.
Yes. What else? What other concerns or fears do you have?
Concerns or fears? I want to see Orlando Arcia move up a little bit in this lineup, Graham.
Okay, so our bet we made earlier in the season is that whenever Arcia went down, which is never going to happen at this point, that he would have a higher batting average than Dansby Swanson. So I think we're just going to have to wait until the end of the season at this point, because Arcia ain't going anywhere. He's having the season of his life. He has defied all expectations.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's... I mean, we saw from when Vaughn Grissom was up just how much better of a player Arcia is. So feel like, and he's one of those guys, like some people on this team do just have that clutch gene, Eddie Rosario included, with that two out grand slam. Like, there are some
Rosario does have a clutch gene for
there
sure.
are some people that, like, the moment, like, their heart slows down.
Yeah. Like, it's weird with Eddie. It seems like he swings at everything. You know, when the when he doesn't have, like, a favorable count. Like, he never walks. He's got a sub-300 on base percentage. But when it's two strikes, the guy just bears down and does something. I mean, when you absolutely need him to do it. It's pretty incredible. I mean, even that game, like, before he hit the grand slam, he struck out, like, two times on horrible at-bats and then had, you know, soft fly out on a ground out. You know, he wasn't doing anything, even though he had the great game the night before. But he was, like, struggling, and then he bears down on this big moment. It's a grand slam. It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, if he can get going, and like if Michael Harris gets going,
look, we will run away with the division.
Yeah, it's going to be
ridiculous.
That's
exactly what happened last year.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a 5.4 WAR player last year. We know how good he can be. If he gets going, the NL East should be like on like death watch. Like they're like, forget about it.
But because I've been a little too positive today, Graham, like you asked for concerns, I will say. I do agree. I want to see some more depth in the bullpen right now, or at least like you have to trust Yates. You have to trust Jimenez. Like we can't run the same four guys out there every night.
Well, I think I can trust Yates a little more than Jimenez. Jimenez hasn't shown me anything. He's never had like one inning this year where I've been like, that looks, even when he's had clean innings, it has been impressive to me. You know, he doesn't go out there and just put his proverbial, you know what, on the table and be like, I am here. I am pitcher. Hear me roar. He doesn't do that shit.
Not yet. I mean, he's another one, though. Like, the track record's there.
The track record is there, but so, it's a little... It's kind of like...
Maybe he'll figure it out.
It's like... we talked about it a while ago.
Shane Green.
It's like Shane Green had, like, that one really good year with Detroit, but was kind of up and down before that. It's very similar to him and us. It was, like, up and down, then great year last year, and then it's like, he gets here. Ugh.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Hopefully, you're right. Jimenez has to figure it out. I'd love Kirby Yates to figure out. He struggled last night, but he has been better recently. That's a long year. But yeah. But I would agree with you. I think Arcia, I would bump him up some.
Yeah, put him in that 6 or 7 spot.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been... And the defense has been impressive. I don't know, like, the advanced metrics, but just eye test-wise, he hasn't done anything to make me be like, ah, he shouldn't be out there. Like, you know, with Vaughn Grissom, it was like a... When Arcia was out, it was like an adventure every night. It was a choose-your-own Vaughn Grissom adventure, and he was like, man, bad throws, misplayed, routine plays on the ground. Yeah, he needs some more time, but I think that's okay.
I don't think he's going to – like, I think he's our trade piece for this summer.
I would hate to give up
on him. To get closer to winning a World Series.
Well, if you can go trade him
– if you can get for like a Chapman and Barlow.
Maybe, or if you can go get a top-tier starter. Yeah, I mean, he should. You're probably right. Like, he would be one of the top featured player in a package.
Especially, like, with Arcia locked up for, like, 3 years. and looking like a what viable a
steal that is. If he can
like $7 million
for 3 years and then you get this level of production. Not that he's been, and you know, it's one of those things too where it's like, it's not like he is some absolute freaking maniac, but he has been, you know, he's hitting over 300 with an 835 OPS for $3 million a year.
Yeah,
I'll take that every day of the week.
He's like a Omar Infante, his all-star season.
Right. Yeah, very similar. He's already been worth 1.6 WAR. And he's got a 375 on base. I love that. Love that. Absolutely love that. That means he's actually walking. I have nothing but good things to say about Orlando.
So what do the Braves have coming up, Graham?
Coming up, the schedule. Let's take a look, see here. The schedule's going to soften up a little bit.
Okay.
Three very winnable series. Washington's coming here. Then we're going to Detroit for our last encounter with Miguel Cabrera. And then we're coming back, and Colorado's coming in town for a four-game set. So Washington, Detroit, Colorado are your next 10 games after tonight against the Mets. I'd say that's very favorable. And after that, you got Philadelphia and Cincinnati. So you are looking, even though Philadelphia and Cincinnati have been playing well recently, you should win like four of those series.
Yeah, let's just get back to winning series
again. That's all you got to do. Win series. So, yeah, very, very favorable matchups for the Braves right now, for sure. And it's so good to be able to put the Mets in their place, continue to show that they are not serious people.
We're up 3-0 on them right now.
Up 3-0 on them right now. And, yeah, I think that's it, Adam. So, we'll wrap this one up. Hope you guys are doing well. We'll see you next week. Until then, rise up, chop on, unite and conquer, and remain true to Atlanta. Hospitamisip.
Hospitamisip.